everyone. Welcome to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Monday, February 28th, 2011, and we are officially underway in spring training. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a writer for PurpleRow.com. I'm here with my regular co-host, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing all right today. How are you, Greg?
I'm pretty good. I know you're a bit tired as we record this. You're a bit out of the normal frame of mind, maybe.
Yeah, Saturday night rolls around and someone posed me an interesting question on the website, so I proceeded to go ahead and write about it for the next couple hours there. And
which benefits the team more, Jonathan Herrera or Jose Lopez?
That's the question, in fact. But yeah. I ended up in a plenty late to write that topic.
And is that going to be on the rock pile on tomorrow / today?
Yeah, Monday's rock pile is where we're going to talk about that. But it ended up keeping me up nice and late. And as we're recording this about an hour ago, I said, you know, I'm going to settle down for a nice short nap and set an alarm on my phone and everything, all prepared. Yeah, I forgot that I had my phone on silent. And, I just woke up about 10 minutes ago.
Oops. Well, we're glad you're with us.
Yeah, I hope that I don't sound too sleep-addled.
Okay, well, let's talk first about the game yesterday. And by yesterday, I mean Saturday the 26th. The first spring training game, the first Salt River Fields official game. You know, we don't want to dwell on it too much because it's really just there for our entertainment. Rather than any predictive relevance. But what were your thoughts? And first, actually, what were your thoughts on getting our first look at a game in the new facility?
Well, I think my thoughts on the new facility are, well, I mentioned this during the game on Saturday. I said, wait, I just realized something. Back when we were in Tucson, I always had to say, well, crap, the Diamondbacks have a nicer spring training facility than the Rockies do, because if you've ever been to Tucson for spring training, Tucson Electric Park far outshines High Corbett Field.
I was there once a long time ago, but I only went to High Corbett. I never saw Tucson Electric.
Yeah, Tucson Electric was much newer. It housed the Sidewinders. It was just a newer park. It's just, there wasn't the history of High Corbett, and High Corbett was, you know, a very neat place, but I just like Tucson Electric more personally, and I thought that everything there looked a lot nicer, so my thought process, like I said, was, drat, the Diamondbacks have a nicer spring training facility than us. Now the Rockies move into this new place, and I say, alright, now we have we share it with the Diamondbacks. Crap. So the fact that the Rockies were able to win that inaugural, talking stick exhibition game, I don't know, made me happy.
Yeah, I know. I was happy too, even though
it always makes us happy that the Rockies win, but now I feel like we have we kicked it off as being the place where the Rockies won the first game, and
right,
you know, the Diamondbacks can just deal with the rest.
So what impressions did you get based upon some of the players' performances? I mean, this early in spring, we get to see a lot of people that we won't be seeing very much of in the future, if ever again. So, you know, it was a close finish there, and I just was wondering how that struck you.
Well, I don't know. It really doesn't mean anything. It just kind of depends on which pitcher blow up do you really want to put more more stock into. Which outing are you more worried about? I mean, like, Ubaldo walked the first guy, Kelly Johnson. Does that mean we should all panic about it? No, we shouldn't.
Of
panic
course
about
not.
Anything.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's too many people who we're already in mid-season form of complaining about Rockies' performances. And I'm thinking, you know what? These guys might not even be. I mean, yeah, Ubaldo hit 95 on the gun or 96 somewhere in there, but
a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
he was hovering around 90, 89.
He's just loosening up.
Exactly.
If he's throwing 100%, there's something's wrong, you know?
Yeah, he's the kind of pitcher who will go through periods of fatigue because he works himself so hard.
Yeah.
He throws, obviously, he puts a lot of stress on that arm, but he's also the type of guy who can still, go, you know, 8 to 9 innings in a game if he's on top of it. And, you know, that's going to wear down somebody.
Yeah, and pitchers, I mean, Ubaldo aside, because obviously him and then Aaron Heilman for the Diamondbacks both only went like about two innings there, so nothing really to write home about. It was more, it's the thing about most spring training games, just because of the nature of them, because you get such a random assortment of pitchers pitching, and the substitutions all during the game. I mean, the things that really struck me were, like it does every big spring training game with a lot, especially early on, is that you get to see a lot of different heroes and a lot of different goats.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things, like Andrew Johnston pitching that, pitching the 10th inning cleanly and, or clean enough anyhow, and, Charlie Blackman's home run. That was a nice shot. I mean, you see it right off the bat, and just, it's one of those things where you see the way the fielders react to it. Even for a glimpse, you're like, oh yeah, he got all that one. So other things that might have struck me, it just individual little things that again, don't mean anything, but like watching Greg Reynolds pitch, we haven't seen him really, I haven't watched him pitch. I mean, even in spring, I haven't really seen anything out of him since 2008 when he got called up and yeah. was terrible.
Yeah, these games are very much entertainment, more so than any real substance for analysis. The, as you already explained, you know, there's so many miniature games going on because you kind of replace your entire team two to three times over, and the performances, you know, are kind of unrelated to the people who were in just three innings earlier. So it's not really a team game. You can say that three different versions of our team accomplished that. Yeah.
One thing that did strike me is kind of interesting. This actually does have slightly more meaning than everything else, but you know, coming down the middle to later innings of the game, when you saw every replacement starting to come in, like, it was cool watching Hector Gomez play without, you know, breaking himself immediately, and, you know, Chris Nelson made a nice play, and, you know, this, and a few guys we've seen before, except, well, I guess not Gomez, but it was seeing Spielborgs out with this group of B and C listers, and he kind of stayed in with the B, when the B listers turned into C listers, and
mm-hmm.
Just kind of a weird thing, because a couple of years back, Spielborgs would have been a possible starter or in there for a bit and, you know, jogging off after the starters came out with everyone else.
Yep.
And yet he was in there with all the, the AA filler and stuff like that. And I don't know, just kind of weird to see a guy who's been such a big part of the team for over the past, 5 years here, just, kind of being... Well, I hate to say it, but playing with the scrubs.
Mm-hmm. They may not have brought like a significantly large amount of outfielders with them, so they kind of decided to keep everybody in the second wave in for a little while. They replaced, they put Garner and Tavares in along with him, and then eventually, who else came in? Somebody else came into the outfield. Blackman, right.
Blackman had that pinch hit appearance and then came in.
Right. So, that might have exhausted their outfield supply.
I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's, again, nothing really to look at, and I don't even mean to infer anything by it. It's just weird to see Spielborgs grouped with everyone. Like Mike Jacobs grouped with everyone. Yeah, you had your moment in the sun when you were okay with the Marlins several years back, and now you're our AAA first baseman, and, you know, the guys like that, you're not really that shocked to see them with them, but it's like, which one of these does not belong here? The answer is Ryan Spielborgs.
Let's talk about that scary moment on the first batter. It was Kelly Johnson, and he popped a foul ball down the left field line, and we had Ian Stewart and Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki all kind of refused to communicate with each other. And my theory was, you know, besides the obvious, oh, they're just readjusting to playing on a field with eight other people. But at the same time, it was such a difficult thing to read that I almost thought that none of the three of them thought they could get there, but kept trying anyway, but they didn't want to call it off or call anybody off because, they didn't think they could actually make the catch.
It was an overextension. I mean, these things happen all the time, and, you know, the only downside of it is obviously the fact that Stewart's kind of being held out afterwards.
What was the label they put on his leg? It was a
sprained MCL.
Okay.
Thomas Harding, from MLB.com, basically phrased it as saying that the so-called the light collision, he said, between Stewie, Gonzalez, and Tulo was, you know, turned out to be more harmful than it seemed originally. Stewart is out, and it sounded like he just got a bit of an ouchie, and they're just being a little precautious about it. And it might not even be 5 or 6 days. They're just kind of holding on for a game or two, and he'll be fine. It really doesn't sound like a big deal at all. They just needed, in my opinion, they just needed to put a name on it so that they could give anybody anything. I just, whenever you put the word MC or the acronym MCL into anything, or ACL or knee, it just kind of freaks people out in general. Oh my gosh, because you're so used to hearing those terms of all of the NFL players' careers ending and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it either. I think that, when I first read it, I certainly wasn't overly concerned, but I was a little surprised simply because, you know, it seemed like everything was okay with everybody. But in spring, don't take any chances. If Stewart's a little worried about his knee, or they're a little worried about his knee or leg or whatever, take it easy for a couple days. That's perfectly fine. He's not going to fall so far behind that he's not going to be ready.
No, it doesn't make any sense for that to happen. It'll be a step or two behind at most, and again, even with a injury this early in spring, you still can't infer that it's going to have any major league impact until, you know, 3 or 4 weeks from now. Oh, Stewart's still out. That would be, then you worry. For right now, you don't worry. He just does some different workouts. I mean, these games are all fake anyways for the time being.
Pretty much. Of course, I always like to call people out who call them fake. I mean, they're real. They're just not official. They don't mean anything in terms of the success and failure of the team, which is why it's so funny to read all the comments. Like, we were talking earlier about Jimenez's speed. If you go around the message boards, there's like 3 posts on all of them that are saying, "What's wrong with Jimenez? Why is he throwing at 90? And it's just like, guys, it's 1 week into their, it's 2 weeks into their training and 1 week since they've been pitching. Give the guy a little chance to, warm up first.
And a lot of people, I mean, this kind of goes the other way around too. When, people say, "Oh, well, look at this scrub just, you know, hit a home run. Why is he not on the opening day roster? Why was this guy so terrible?" or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Pitchers aren't necessarily even pitching like normal right now.
Yeah,
they might be working completely bizarre. They might not even be looking at their catcher beyond their target. You know, they might be getting, you know, I wouldn't doubt half their games being called from the dugout anyhow.
Right.
Just they say, "Hey, you need to work on getting that change up." And so they're going to be throwing obvious pitches just to see if they can get the movement, to see if they can get the location on them. And then if it gets, you know, nailed to the gap for a double, that doesn't mean that the guy did a bad job. It just meant the batter's like, "Okay, this guy's clearly working on something here. Let's sit on this and wait for this," and clap, it's gone. And you're like, "Oh, he looks terrible already." And this, "Well, no, he threw him a meatball kind of intentionally there." Or, I mean, you might have a guy who's just working on one particular pitch for most of the game, and he throws it more than he normally would, and so seeing he's working on it, it might not be as good as they hope, and batters are teeing off on him. It's not a big deal. So, I mean, when we want to look at spring competition, see who's batting the best, see who's pitching the best, we got to remember that it's not as if these guys are in June form and we're holding the competition there. They're doing different things. These competitions, these performances, you know, they're going to be decided as much by stuff that we don't see or hear reported about as the stuff that we do see.
Yeah. And it's, of course, it's also based on patterns, which you can't really gauge from one game. We have to see how over the entire next month these players react and how they keep up with the pace. Because, you know, if someone struggles through 3.5 weeks of the spring, it means something a lot different than drawing a conclusion from, you know, just a couple games. Right now, no decisions have been made, and really, I mean, these games right now are probably more about getting the pitch, getting the players ready in general than even starting to determine who's going to make the roster. I don't even think that was really on anybody's mind yet.
And I'm surprised the fields weren't a lot more orange after the game with all the rust shaking off.
What do you mean?
What, rust is orange.
Oh, I gotcha. It was a joke. okay. Any other thoughts basically on anybody that you saw just from a again, the perspective of a game that really is not designed to create any conclusions for a month from now.
Oh, I mentioned Gomez earlier. I would say that watching Gomez, he really doesn't match a lot of what we've read about him, especially when it comes to his fielding. It's eager, it's explosive, but it's kind of sloppy too. He gets to a lot of balls that he maybe shouldn't be able to get to, or can't really turn the play on them and tries anyhow. I mean, you could just see a lot of those kinds of things in his, you know, the way his movements and the way he handled the balls he got to and stuff like that. There's a lot of raw awesome there, and it needs a lot of polishing.
And you could tell he also was one of the ones who got a little distracted by the ninth inning meltdown there. He lost his focus a bit when he threw that ball away.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, of all the players that we got to see, he was definitely one of the most exciting for me because I always feel bad about how forgotten he gets, and that's not just by people in general, but by myself. When I'm thinking about all our young middle infield types, I kind of tend to leave him off, and I really shouldn't be because it's just entirely because he seems gone from the organization so much due to injury. You know, we watched most of the minor league season last year without him.
Yeah, well, so when a guy has half his minor league career on the disabled list, he falls off a lot of prospect lists. I mean, you still acknowledge that he's there and he's still young enough to, you know, rebound himself, but it just kind of makes you wonder how far he really has a chance of proceeding or progressing.
And it was still fun for me also to see Jorgensen and Andrew Johnston and other people that, you know, you just don't get to see on television very often. Jorgensen is interesting because he is one of I don't know if he's one of the youngest in age, but he is only just starting his career as a prospect, really, because he really got on people's radar last year at Modesto and was promoted to Tulsa. And then he was selected along with a few other higher-type prospects to tag along with the Arizona Fall League. So now he's starting to get on some people's radar, and he's probably not really used to that at all. I mean, so I can really understand the difficulties he may have had adjusting to being with the major league camp and so forth, because this is the first time he's been really anywhere near that. Did you have any thoughts on him specifically? Not his performance necessarily, because as we said, it really doesn't mean anything, but just on him as a player in our organization.
Not particularly. I mean, you pretty much said everything that needs to be said. I mean, he had the, you know, Modesto performances and then the AFL. So, I mean, there's not much more to really say about him at this point. I mean, until we start seeing his 2011 season in Tulsa, assuming that's where they do end up starting him.
I think so. Yeah.
Though that will be that'll be a bit more discussed right now. As for the moment, he's kind of a non-factor for me. I don't mean to, you know, sell the guy short. He just, at the moment, he's not really the minor leaguer I want to keep my eye on for how it's going to affect the 2011 season. I mean, I'm looking more at guys like, you know, Blackmon, Rex Brothers, maybe even Pacheco.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot to mention Pacheco earlier because he looked pretty decent.
Well, yeah,
very composed, good contact, things like that.
Over the past year, he's just been hitting up a storm, basically. He doesn't stop. I mean, he was also at Modesto with a promotion to Tulsa last year. He'll be the starting catcher for the Drillers to start, the season. And, you know, he also went to the AFL, and all through all those stops, he was just on fire, really. He hits for average, and he's also got a lot of versatility. They think he can, the blockade of catchers ahead of him with maybe Iannetta, Rosario, McHenry, those types. If it ends up that two of those guys work out and then cement a blockade at the major league level, you know, they think that they can work around that because he can play. They think his unique body type will allow him to play just about anywhere else, and that he would be able to adjust to a different role. And he's already done that three times, as far as I understand. They were talking about it on the broadcast that he started as a pitcher and then move to corner infield and then move to catcher. So
having him being able to play first, third, and catcher, it would be a unique blend of versatility, kind of a Russell Martin meets Victor Martinez as far as where you play the guy. And, you know, in a year, that might be a big deal. A year, maybe two, it kind of depends on it just kind of depends on how things unfold with Ian Stewart, with Todd Helton, and with Ty Wigginton.
And also, of course, with Iannetta and Rosario and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking more at the places. I mean, if we're assuming that, you know, some combination of Iannetta, Rosario, maybe even Jose Morales sticks around, you know, who knows, whatever. I'm assuming the catching situation kind of stays clogged. I don't know. I just see more potential at first or third for Pacheco or, you know, all of them as a utility-type player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that he'll be the first one who is kind of pulled out of that sort of clog of catchers and be reassigned somewhere else. But it's certainly good to see players like that. And I mean, he only had a pinch hit single, I believe, but it was still it's always just nice to see. Again, it makes you feel good watching them just from a non-committal standpoint to the actual end result of the game. So we've got a day off the day we're recording this, Sunday, and then games pick back up on Monday. We've got then games straight, I believe, through the third week of spring. The next day we don't have a game will be in late March. I'm bringing up the schedule right now to confirm the date. But that's going to be plenty of stuff to pay attention to there. So let's go ahead and talk about some of the two questions that we got in the last thread, if that's good. You have anything else?
Oh, no. It was a fun game yesterday, but that was just about the extent of it. It was a fun game.
Mm-hmm. It's just good to see everybody again. So we have one question from Pretty in Purple, one of our devoted listeners, who says, what is your confidence level in the regards to the bullpen? And that's apparently especially directed towards me. I don't know why, but maybe it's because I am always terribly afraid of the bullpen and never seem to have any confidence in them. But why don't you answer that first, and then I'll give my answer after that.
I think it looks stronger than ever. Only piece I would have loved to add, and it would have been a complete luxury add, but that would be heaven somehow picking up Brian Fuentes again.
Interesting.
I was pushing for him earlier this offseason because he was still a free agent. He was on the Rockies' radar, not very strongly, but there were brief mentions, at least by Rank, saying that the Rockies wouldn't be opposed to bringing him back. It would provide stability in the left-handed relief role that Morales may or may not provide. I don't think he will, personally. And I know that's very negative, but I think just kind of see how that as how it is. And I would take some of the pressure off Matt Reynolds, and it'll be his true rookie year this year, right?
Yes, he didn't get anywhere near enough stuff last year to count
didn't
towards.
Think so.
Yeah, but it's always tricky to categorize because, I mean, for example, we did Purple Row Awards last year where we talked about rookies, and, you know, a lot of us picked Matt Reynolds to go into that category, but at the same time, he's going to be eligible again next year. So,
But as far as other, you know, the rest of the bullpen goes, it's really I like it. I don't see any real problems with it other than, you know, just a dominating lefty, and I think Matt Reynolds will do just a fine job there. I think the value of the lefty-righty platooning is a little overstated, but as long as we have everyone's roles somewhat figured out and Jim Tracy sticks to them, I think they'll be fine. Like last year, it seemed like nobody realized that Joe Bimel couldn't handle whole innings. He should be in to face a couple lefties and then go away. I do not let Joe Bimel face righties because they will hit him and they will hit him hard, and surely enough, they did. Eighth inning, Betancourt, I just have no concerns about the guy whatsoever. He just, there's no way he's going to put up numbers like he did in 2010, which were, you know, historical context numbers where, like, a strikeout to walk ratio by themselves only beaten by, like, let's see, I think it was Dennis Eckersley, Mariano Rivera, and then actually Edward Mujica. Those are about the only guys who were able to surpass those numbers. Anyways, so Betancourt, I mean, he's going to have a good season. I'm not worried about that. I am concerned about Belial, but I am not as concerned about his role because they did make the move to bring in Matt Lindstrom there. And that also gives you a guy who has some, at least some ninth inning experience, as he did some part-time closing with Florida and Houston. And now that he's here, I mean, that kind of takes care of the rest of the seventh inning, pretty much. So, I mean, you got Matt Reynolds as the lefty. You got some combination of Belial and Matt Lindstrom in the seventh. Rafael Betancourt in the eighth. Houston Street in the ninth. And, you know, game over. Let's go home.
Yeah, for me, I do like the bullpen more than the past few years. I can certainly agree with that. And the move to bring in Lindstrom was very positive. I think that there's a degree of a bit of a lack of confidence from some people because he spent much of last year kind of hurt and unable to really, I would almost compare it to like Brad Hopp. He was kind of simultaneously playing but also not feeling very well. And
he never really got into his groove.
Right. He couldn't nail himself back down to the performance that he was expected of. And I hope that there are no side effects lingering from that. And the consensus from both Lindstrom himself and the organization seems to be that all systems are go and that he feels good. And I mean, a lot of people joke about all those things where people say like, oh, I feel great. I'm ready to go. Bring him on. But at the same time, we also know that more often than not, the organizations and players are honest when a player's not at their best. They will tell us if something's wrong and they're holding him off or some such. I don't have any solid reservations about that right now based on anything concrete because there haven't been any signs yet. But of course, it always lingers in the back of your mind a little bit. But I think that having a combination of Street, Betancourt, and Lindstrom there with a hopefully continued effective Belial that will make a very, very solid bottom of the game, end of the game of the bullpen. I have a lot of confidence in them, provided they all stay healthy. And of course, the biggest issue with the back end of the pen last year, aside from maybe Houston Street's early injury, is that they were overworked to the core because there were so many games where we needed to call on them day after day after day in a row, and we had to start getting really creative about how to balance the depth there. We didn't have anybody to step in when Belial was tired, so we had to overwork him a little bit. And that's
a little bit?
Yes, a little asterisk. We had to bring in at the end of the season people like Octavio Dotel to really kind of cover that time while Belial, to keep Belial's arm from falling off. And so with Lindstrom, hopefully we have an option there that is going to give us four players that we really trust in the bottom three innings instead of just three to hold that together a little bit better. When it comes to the top end of the pen, you know, I don't worry too much about Matt Reynolds. I don't necessarily know if he's going to take us by storm, but I think he'll be an adequate left-handed option. And if he's not, then, you know, we don't have a great deal of left-handed pitching depth, starting or relieving, but when it comes to relieving, we have Rex Brothers, and then it's kind of a question mark after that. The disaster scenario there is that Reynolds has trouble adjusting to a full season, Morales doesn't work out, and maybe Rex Brothers isn't ready. Then we're going to have to go hunting for more options and so forth.
They'll just trade for Joe Bimel again.
That would be amusing. I highly doubt that Pittsburgh would be holding on to him for any reason. So maybe. There's certainly plenty of options out there for teams in need of stabilization with the left-handed bullpen part of the team. But at the same time, I can't say I'm too afraid of it. When it comes to Morales, I'm just done trying to predict what's going to happen because I really want him to prove everybody wrong. I always feel really bad when everybody, like in one thread or one comment section or something, suddenly gets on this anti-Morales stream where...
You'd really think that Morales was like a multiple-time convict the way people talk about him. I mean, the animated GIF we saw where he walked Pedro Feliz and was a little angry, why you know throw strikes.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny, and you gotta be able to crack jokes at you guys, but I mean, I thought that was funny because it was funny. It looked to just be poking fun at him. But, I mean, yeah, a lot of people, there is a lot of vitriol. Yeah, you can go ahead and shoot him into the sun for all I care, and I'm surprised people aren't just calling for his literal death, you know? Yeah, he's a shaky pitcher. He might not make it. It's just kind of the organization sees a guy who can throw, you know, low to mid-90s in his left-handed, and that's the kind of thing that organizations hate to give up on.
Absolutely, and I back them on that. I mean, I see so many people say it should be common sense that we should have already gotten rid of him. He's done. But I can't fault the team for holding on to him this long. I maintain that
I wanted to trade him 3 years ago.
Trading him is different, though, than giving up on him.
Just straight cutting him. Yeah, exactly. Well, a lot of people have different definitions of giving up on a player. Giving up on a player could mean moving him out of your organization. Giving up on a player could mean straight cutting him. Giving up on a player could mean, I don't know, shooting him. You know, any number of things.
That would raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, it might raise a few, but... No, I think it was kind of funny the way that Ubaldo Jimenez kind of called out Morales. It didn't come off quite as, quite as one-upsmanship as that makes it sound when I say calling out, but he basically said, quit trying to overanalyze the guy. He's got a lot of nasty stuff and he's got the ability to be a decent pitcher. The point is, it's just on his shoulders now, so quit trying to figure out what's wrong with him and just let him do his thing. And if he makes it, he does it. If he doesn't, he doesn't.
I didn't read any of this. Where did this come from?
It was a few days ago. I believe it was in the Post blog where it was just the stuff that I took the most out of it was Jimenez saying the guy is he has the ability to be a good pitcher. I came up with him. I saw what he has. And, you know, I think we should just give him the chance to do it. Not so much give him the chance as if, you know, calling out the organization, but just saying, let's stop trying to put his situation into a box and say, oh, he's a head case, or oh, he can't this or that, or call a therapist or whatever. Just he's got it in him. He just has to harness it. And that's the story of so many Major League Baseball players in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm certainly rooting for him, and I hope I do hope it works out. But at the same time, I agree with you that there's no reason for, you know, false optimism. He's had a lot of chances, and he hasn't taken any of them to the level he needs to justify being kept about. But at the same time, I'm not going to outright say I don't expect him to do it because I hate making predictions like that anyway. But two, I think it could honestly go either way, and so I'm not going to fault the team. I'm not going to fault them for, you know, giving him the chance to start the season in the bullpen. But, you know, if it doesn't work out, this is pretty much his last shot. So, one way or the other, it's probably pretty close to being resolved. And hopefully we can all move on from having the, all the crazy Morales talk going on.
I just hope that for his sake, just because of the flashes of brilliance we saw in 2007, like the start in San Diego against Jake Peavy, I just wish he could really finally put things together. I mean, even if just for a short while, I mean, I just love him to silence the critics for his own sake. Because organizationally speaking, yes, it would be nice to have a guy with as nasty as Morales is in the pen, or in the rotation, or wherever. But, I mean, just for his sake, I put more emphasis on the commentary that I read about him than necessarily reaches him. Or I feel like more of it reaches him than it likely does. But, you know, just for his sake, I just want him to finally be like, you know what, I was a top-notch prospect, and here, this is me being a top-notch pitcher now.
Mm. Okay, the other question we have is from Charlie77, who asks, let's see, where is that question? The first one is, or actually it's the second one, but I want to answer this one first. The Rockies have traded and released a lot of quality minor leaguers lately, like Chris Balcom Miller, Ethan Hollingsworth, and Samuel Deduno, etc., over the past year to build up depth. Who would you say is the most likely to succeed with other teams? Do you have an opinion?
Oh, Deduno. If I had to pick one, I'd say Deduno. CBM, Chris Balcom Miller, just too far down to really be, even though he looked very promising in Asheville, you know, how do you project that into a major league career?
Especially since we've only seen him in his new organization for, what, a month and a half or some such?
Exactly.
We don't know how he's going to adjust to being traded away. I would agree it's too early to really call him. I mean, we know his skill set, and we know that there's teams that are going to be interested in that skill set, but at the same time, there's no guarantee he's going to wind up with one who really will take advantage of that.
No, the fact is for me is that Sam Deduno, last year in camp, his curveball was just described as jaw-dropping, filthy, nasty, all kinds of different adjectives praising it, from, and not just from, you know, Apodaca or whoever, but I think like Helton said stuff like that, and maybe it was Cook too. You know, players were saying how nasty his stuff was too. It just was never a really clear-cut spot for him. So it'll be interesting to see if we can actually catch on with San Diego, because if they have anything, they have young pitching.
Yeah, and that's both an advantage and a disadvantage towards him. I mean, the advantage being, you know, he is going to have the environment that produces that kind of player, as well as the baseball stadium that produces that kind of player to build off of. And we also know that San Diego is going to want to give him every chance he can get. I mean, it's not like he was often claimed by somebody who is like, oh, we'll just use him as an emergency. I would think that San Diego would have an interest in a player like this precisely because they think they can add him to a knockout bullpen. At the same time, the disadvantage, obviously, is that he's going to have a lot of players who are just as good, if not better, as he is to compete with. And, you know, if San Diego winds up with a bullpen full of other guys like Deduno, you know, he might get lost in the shuffle, especially being like the quote-unquote new guy to the team.
He could conceivably be a rotation candidate as well.
That's true. That's absolutely true. I kind of signed off Deduno there as a bullpen guy already, because if he had stayed in our organization, I think there's about a 75-80% chance he was going to be converted this year. I think that I had kind of jumped to a conclusion there. I haven't really thought about Deduno as an addition to San Diego's rotation. I mean, there's no pressure to add him now. He's already a little old for a prospect, but with a new organization, it's kind of like a fresh start. He's still got an option year. They can keep him down this year and then decide what to do with him. So yeah, I guess I wouldn't rule that out either. But of course, similar to the Pen, the Padres have a lot of younger rotation guys that they are excited about too. So, I would agree, especially, judging from how advanced and developed all three of these are, that Deduno is probably the safest bet to have major league success. Because with the other two, especially Balcom Miller, but Hollingsworth as well, they're just breaking into kind of the double A, or Hollingsworth is just kind of breaking into the double A level. That's probably where he'll be in Oakland's system. And I think that's about the time when you start to learn where somebody's gonna fall. Some people have projected Hollingsworth to be a fifth starter type, some have projected him to be a relief type. So I really can't say for him that I know, and I'm again, we should also explain that neither of us are super minor league type analysts. I mean,
the farm's always kind of been it's never been a strong focus of mine. And outside of who's good, who's not, who's interesting.
And my understanding of it is always about kind of the depth organizational type perspective. Any information I get on these players is based on other people who know a lot more than I do about minor league development. So, I read stuff on these players, and that's about the extent of my understanding of Malcolm Miller and Hollingsworth and what they're actually capable of. And as we know, as everybody knows, even the experts cannot foresee every twist and turn that comes along with these people. Some of them might surprise and suddenly skyrocket in terms of their value. Others may fall off the map entirely. We see it all the time because if you look at our perps list of prospects, you know, I'm not saying that that should be taken too seriously as any kind of official list of prospects, because those of us who are voting, and that includes most of the staff, you know, we go off the same things that everybody else does, being word from other people who have actually seen them play. So it's not really any kind of official thing, but we do know that the turnaround of players is pretty significant. Each time we hold the vote, we see 10 to 15 of them drop off or drop down 10, 15 slots or move up 10, 15 slots. You know, it's kind of constantly shifting, and, you know, people lose stock and gain it and so forth. So there's a lot of bouncing around that the other two still have to do, whereas with Samuel Deduno, we're kind of getting to the spot where we can really see where he's headed. And I mean, there's still the rotation bullpen decision going on, but we know more or less what he can do. And so I would agree with you that that's probably the easiest call to make of the three. So the other question, and, you know, we're running out of time here, but I just want to touch on this really quick because we didn't talk about it last week too much when we were talking about the off-season review, but I do want to touch on it, and that is how would you judge the strategy to sign Tulo and Carger to such long contracts now when they didn't before? I think what Charlie's trying to ask is there – why now as opposed to earlier or later? And he actually goes on to say, is there suddenly money available because of playoff appearances and so forth? So since I pushed it off to you to answer first last time, I'll do it first this time. I don't think there was any sudden burst of money available per se. I think they recognized an opportunity to brand the Rockies a little bit stronger because right now there's more hype about the team than there has been in a long time. You could still call it a little disappointing because Denver has never really been a baseball type city, but at the same time, I feel like the fan confidence is raising, and in order to cement a fan base to a team that they'll recognize for a long time and be excited about for a long time, they're looking to keep around the names that are striking the more casual fans, so they can kind of have somebody to know about for an extended period of time. You know, that's the external reason. The obvious internal reason would be they have confidence that they're going to be good baseball players for a long time. On my opinion on the signings, I totally confess that signings this long always make me nervous, and I think there's a legitimate argument behind, especially Gonzalez's signing, that it might have been a little premature, but at the same time, I fully understand the counterargument to that being that, you know, we might have lost our chance had we waited any longer, because a second season like the one last season, even though it's far from a guarantee, if he did it again, we probably would have had to pull the Matt Holliday treatment on him. So there's risk involved with every signing like this, and, you know, the worst case scenario is that one or both of them don't play to their their talent level, as we would expect, and, several years from now, we are in a situation where our budget is strung because we're paying these guys too much. But on the other hand, it's gonna give us at least two players, and depending on what happens with some of the other ones, the possibility of a good team that can hold strong together for, you know, a decent amount of time and hopefully be productive in the next, you know, 5 to 7 years or so. What are your thoughts?
Well, you mentioned something interesting, or made me think anyways, if there's risk either way you look at it. Risk, obviously, the obvious risk is what if they get hurt? What if they don't play as well? It involves too much about what if the players don't do whatever. And then you also mentioned the idea of branding. When you think of the Colorado Rockies, up until just the last 2 years here, you thought, you know, ridiculous launching pad, and that was really about it. Maybe Todd Helton, and then Rocktober. I guess you could throw Rocktober in there somehow, but I mean, you think of the Yankees, you think of Derek Jeter, and then any other number of their superstars. You think of the Washington Nationals, you think of Strasburg and Ryan Zimmerman, and if you follow a little more closely, Bryce Harper. But then you think about teams like the Pirates, or the Orioles, like, who do you recognize on those teams? There's not really that many players left to recognize. And now the Rockies have these two young guys, and three if you count Yabaldo in there as well. You got three very recognizable guys where you think about Colorado Rockies, you think of Yubaldo Jimenez, Troy Tulowitzki, and Carlos Gonzalez.
All of whom were top 10 players league-wide last year. So they are emerging on the radar as not only local stars, but kind of MLB in general types.
Exactly. It's someone to actually think about, because when the 2007 run happened, they're all like, look at the young talent right now. There's Ryan Howard, and there's, you know, Cole Hamels, and all these other guys, and no one from the Rockies. Well, I hate to say it, but Jeff Francis just wasn't that flashy of a player. I mean, yeah, he was a good young pitcher, and, you know, by some standards of evaluation, 17 wins is a good reason to mention a guy, but no one is really that marketable. No one cares what Aaron Cook was doing. No one was that exciting other than possibly Yabaldo because he threw 100. Okay, the risk from the other side, though, is the risk of what it's going to cost you if you don't keep these guys. There's risk in putting a lot of money into a few guys, but there's also risk of letting them leave and then your prospects not panning out and your fans being like, oh, look, it's another rebuild. Whoop-de-crap, don't care anymore. So, I mean, for the Rockies being branded as a team up until recently, and by branded I kind of mean by the excitable, doesn't follow the team that close kind of Denver sports fan and say, oh, look, the Rockies are going to sell off all their good talent again just like they did Matt Holliday and then call the ownership cheap and things along those lines. By sealing up those two, it's kind of saying, yeah, you're right, they totally let Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki hit free agency, you know. No, they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that, just building fan confidence, that small amount, and saying, hey, guys, we're not going to turn the whole lineup over or the whole roster over again, you know, in 2 years here. We're going to try to keep this thing together. That should raise fan confidence a bit there. And you're going to hopefully, maybe not in the sense of seeing more revenue, although you might see a bit more based on, you know, things like jersey sales or people saying, like, oh, yeah, I go check them out now. I think they're finally doing the way I like to do it. But the point is you won't see that drop that comes from the terrible roster turnovers. Like 2005 was the only season where the Rockies saw less than 2 million fans come over the course of the season. And a lot of that was because the 2004 Rockies were kind of a joke. I mean, you had Helton still and you had Walker for part of the year, but past that it was, you know, Preston Wilson and Royce Clayton, what was left of Vinny Castilla, who actually had a pretty decent year. But, you know, you saw the first of Matt Holliday that year, and it was a team of veterans and a couple young guys, and most of the veterans were, you know, nearing the end of their careers as it was. So it wasn't much of a competitive team. And the fans let the ownership what they thought about that by not showing up the next year. But what still kind of cracks me up about that, too, is it was one of the worst years the Rockies have had. Not the worst, but one of the bad ones there. But that bad year then gave us a good slot in the 2005 draft, which then brought us Troy Tulowitzki.
There you go. It all works out. The system works.
So the risk, like I said, is kind of you weigh it. Do you risk losing your money and your investment because Tulo got hurt or whatever, or do you risk not ever seeing any extra money from the fans because they're all just thinking you're going to turn everything over in a couple years there? And I think the Monforts, along with Dan O'Dowd, decided that the best way to maximize revenues around these two players was to lock them up long term, maybe even pay a little, you know, more, a little longer than you had to, but, you know, saying these are the guys you are going to see coming to the ballpark for the next however long. I mean, it's weird enough to think that I'll be 34 or 35 when Carlos Gonzalez's contract is up, never mind Tulowitzki's.
Lovely. Yeah, I'll be, let's see, it's a 10-year contract for Tulowitzki, right?
Yep.
So yeah, 33.
Yeah. Nice. It is kind of funny to think about guys, at this, because Tulowitzki is over a year younger than I am. I believe it's either a year or it's 10 months, whatever it is. He's not that much far, he's not that far away from my age, but he is younger than me, and I don't know, it makes you wonder, like, what did I do with my life? Why am I not a phenomenal baseball player?
Yeah, I'm only just starting to get used to that, because I'm a bit younger than you are, and I have, Yelich Yassin is really the first player who's younger than me who's broken in, and Hector Gomez is also younger than me. But, you know, Yassin is only younger than me by like 3 months, so that's not too scary, but I'm seeing all these guys get drafted that were born in like 1992, and I'm like, what the heck? No.
Well, Greg Smith and I are the same age to the day. That's kind of funny.
That is funny. I don't remember if I read that before. I might have. It sounds a little familiar, but.
Yep. Same birthday and everything. Same birthday, same birth year. But knowing that you're going to see Tulowitzki every day when you go to the ballpark is something that's going to, well, I don't know. It's going to give fans kind of that sense of confidence that, you know, you're going to see a guy like Tulo.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they're banking on. So risky, sure. I think that this kind of risk, though, I feel like a proactive risk is better in general than a reactive risk, in the sense of worst case scenario, absolute worst case scenario, they can say, hey, we tried.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, the fan base just has to kind of be understanding about these things. And, you know, yeah, that's kind of what it comes down to. It's not like we gave Carlos Lee a giant contract or something like that. I mean, Tulo seemed like a good bet to lock up.
Yeah, I would say that we are not Ed Wade yet. Okay, so unless you have any other notes, I think that is a pretty full show there. So
yep, we're looking to have some guests on in the next couple weeks here. We'll
probably not next week, but we are looking for getting that started in 2 weeks from today. We'll try to get somebody on to spice things up, and so you don't have to listen to us ramble on for 45 minutes.
That's okay. All I got, though.
Yep. Just to remind everybody, we have a full week of games. Every single one of them is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. When it comes to media coverage, honestly, I wouldn't put any stock in it. FSN was scheduled to do broadcasts for tomorrow's game and Tuesday's. Unfortunately, they're not airing either of them, which kind of implies to me that they were canceled, but MLB.com still swears that there's going to be television coverage. Don't bet on it. Knowing from the irresponsible way that they cover spring training with their media, I really don't know what to expect. Keep your eye on their media guides and so forth, but we might just have to be following via game day or whatever. So anyway, we have 7 games from through our next show, so we will have plenty more to talk about next week regarding what we've seen from then on. So with that, thanks everybody for listening. We will be back next Monday, which is March 7th. And until then, we'll see you later.